sharing stories of hilarity and heartache. Columnist Scott Salmon introduces us to his remarkable mother in his new collection of essays, What Are You Going to Write About When I'm Gone? I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, Scott Salmon takes us on his mom's brave journey battling stage 4 cancer. And you'll hear there are more laughs than tears in the story, including mom's love of gambling and when she suddenly went topless at a crowded beach. Scott tells us how he proposed to his wife on stage during a concert and how he overcame fear of flying to share world travels with his readers, both in Du Bois County and now in Evansville. 2 Main Street is next, presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services and Bayard Private Wealth Management. From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Now let's start with the title of the latest book from columnist Scott Salmon with the Du Bois County Herald. The title, What Are You Going to Write About When I'm Gone? Well, that's a haunting thought for my guest who has shared his mother's journey battling stage 4 cancer. Scott has given readers an inside look at his family's foibles for years, and mom has been a protagonist in a series of literary adventures, including when she went topless at Saddle Lake. Scott Salmon is active in raising funds for a variety of causes through a popular series of concerts. We'll read and sing for food. So, Scott Salmon, welcome to 2 Main Street. How you doing?
Thank you, Dave. I was doing all right until you brought up the topless mother scenario. Now I'm reliving that.
Oh, it's kind of PTSD on that one, I guess.
That's right. That's,
oh, boy. Yeah, now, before we go any further in this conversation, let's go back. Let's get this over with. To your mother going topless. So what was that all about, Scott?
Well, that was in the 70s. Saddle Lake in Perry County, Indiana. We're from Tell City originally. And I just remember laying on the beach with my mom, and I think she forgot she had undone her top to her bathing suit, stood up, and bloop, there it goes. Went south to her ankles, and just so happened all the cool high school kids were there and got a glimpse of this, and... And I went and dug a hole and buried myself in it. So, yeah.
Well, how'd your mom react?
Well, she reacts quite fondly to it now. That was a very popular story in our Will Read and Sing for Food shows for years, and always got a lot of laughs. I do remember mom quickly picking it up and turning around so others couldn't see her, much to the enjoyment of the fishermen out in the boats on the other behind her. So she just decided to share the wealth, I guess. And she survived, and I got a good story out of it. And so
she's always
been
about
it. She has been a great source of entertainment for me. And
definitely, yeah. I read your book. There's a lot of good, good stories in there.
Yeah.
Now the book, What Are You Going to Write About When I'm Gone, is dedicated to your mother. We just talked about Patricia Salmon.
Correct.
And you call her your champion.
Yes.
Now, you write about her cancer diagnosis in September of 2016, and that diagnosis wasn't good. It was advanced cancer. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so mom is from a family and a generation that always hid her pain, didn't admit to anything all of her life from a child on. So by the time, you know, she ultimately admitted to feeling pain and, well, let's go see a doctor, you know, that's all she wrote. She already had stage 4 colon cancer at that time. She had never wanted to do any colonoscopies or anything like that. That was just, you know, how she was. And so from that point on, it was, you know, it was grim news. They removed the areas with that, but it already spread because of stage 4. So, and then she's had battles with it going to her liver and her lung, and now it's kind of made a, you know, around the world, circled to her pancreas, she's still with us, still does what she. It hasn't changed her weekly stays at the casino down the block here. It used to be Aztar, and now it's Tropicana. And I think mom and dad might own it now. I think that's the new name. I know there's
I'll know it.
So it's the Pat and MJ casino.
New ownership.
Yes, yes.
And I think the doctor said something about when about the prognosis. He advised her to find the Lord, and you say in your book she responded, I know where he is. I want to go to Vegas. So did yes, she go to Vegas?
She did not. You know what? Tropicana, the casino here is her Vegas. I mean, they're treated like king and queen. I'm telling you, Dave, it's, you know, for years, I mean, the full weekends is always the same hotel room. And it used to drive me nuts. There was my inheritance. And I always, you know, this brother Astar I had that I never really met was, you know, really taking them. But I've come to realize that I think they pump something through the air that's keeping these people alive. Good business plan, but no, now I understand. She just loves going to Astar, and my dad as well, and they have not missed maybe one weekend, but and then when they were closed due to the pandemic, but still going strong, and you know, until she's clawing her way up the stool to sit at the slots, maybe I'll worry, but she's still handling it all right. So
is that her game of choice?
Oh, yeah.
Slots?
The pennies.
Oh, she plays the penny slots?
Yeah, and my
dad. You can sit there all day or all week.
Well,
and do
exactly.
That.
and dad goes on the other side and really spends the money. And
now, I think your mom was quoted as saying the biggest jackpot she ever had was your dad.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So, you know, they've been married 58 years. I've gotten a lot of material from their incredible relationship, but a lot of funny stuff along the way. And the book, you know, I didn't have too much sad things to write about Mom. Mom's always been around, you know, when I started writing columns at USI in like 84, 85, when our third newspaper, I realized the second column I ever wrote in my life was about my mom's bingo addiction. And so it just started from there, and I forgot all about that. And when I did this book, I said, I'm going to go deep here. I know I wrote about Mom. And it's like, oh, my gosh, here's this bingo column that I—
So bingo led to slots?
Oh, my God. Well, bingo led to horse racing, to there was always euchre playing, a dollar a game. Oh. And so they were just endless. But then, you know, once the casino came to town— The boat, as I always call it.
Yes, the boat.
But, you know, it's either Brother Astar or the boat. That's how I call it. They were hooked for good then.
And then you mentioned that on one of her trips to the casino, she ran into Bill Cosby, the entertainer who was in town for a show. And,
yes.
She had an encounter with him, and you talk about that in the book.
Yeah, it's luckily, yeah, there's a good story in there. And luckily it was... I don't think she recalled waking up 2 hours later and wondering where she had been, but it was before the bad stories on Bill. But yeah, it still wasn't the greatest story. I mean, he kind of made fun of how she was talking in the parking lot, and the story details that. But it's a funny story, but in a way, it's like, you know, it's you can look back at it and cringe, too. It's like, he wasn't very nice to her.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, it was a brush with fame for Mom.
There you go.
And I got a story out of a few
you
years
did.
Later. So
you did.
I'm just like a buzzard over a cadaver, man.
Circling.
That's right.
Now your father, M.J. Solomon, yes. I don't know what M.J. stands for, and probably I shouldn't know.
Well, I'll tell you.
Oh, okay.
I'm Marion the Third. My grandpa was Marion, my dad was Marion, and while my grandpa was very proud of that name, my dad decided he wanted to change his to MJ, much like John Wayne was also named Marion, and, you know,
that's
call
right.
me Duke, please. So that was Dad's Duke moment. He was Marion Jr. and Marion Joseph Jr., and then I got Marion Scott. And then when my son was born, I broke the chain of terror and named my son Austin, and it broke my grandpa's heart. But you know what? It's pretty tough carrying that Marion name in grade school. And
well, at least it's not a boy named Sue.
No, well, it's pretty similar. I tell you what.
Now, your dad, I love this description of your father as a swing shift worker and the aroma of fried eggs and Folgers. I can kind of smell that right now.
Hey, it might be on me right now, Dave. I still do that. But, oh, yeah, Dad was a swing shifter across the river from Tell City in Kentucky and for many years. And so it was that weird existence of, you know, my dad might be sleeping during the day when I'm awake and mom's awake. And it was interesting. He did it for, you know, 20-some years.
There's the aluminum plants over there?
Yes, there was an aluminum plant there. It changed a lot of names, too, like the casino has. I don't even know what it is now. Mm-hmm.
Now, is that the Bill Cummings Bridge you cross? Is that the one
that
Hallsville?
Canelton, the crosses to Hallsville. It's the Cummings Bridge. I can't remember anymore what the first name is. You might be right.
I think it is the Bill Cummings Bridge. I know they recently remodeled it. It was down to one lane for a while, and that was kind of rough because I would go to my wife's in Girl Scouting.
Sure.
And Camp Cook is right there outside Canelton.
Yeah.
So we'd go there for events and everything. And we go over the Kentucky side and come across over the Hallsville Bridge there, the Bill Cummings Bridge.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that. And I remember when it was a ferry when I was little. I remember Dad.
Oh, really?
Before that bridge was built, I think the early 70s, late 60s. And my grandpa always swore that the Russians would probably bomb that bridge first once the big war happened. So that connection between Canals and Hawes was very important to the survival of our country. So I'm glad it never happened.
Well, I'll share one story about the Canelton-Tell City area. I got a chance to ride on the LST 325.
Yes.
And I boarded it in Aurora, Indiana, and we came downriver to Evansville. And, of course, we had to go through the Canelton locks and dam.
Yeah.
At about 3 o'clock in the morning, which was really eerie, but all the lights of those plants right along the Ohio River just illuminated the whole area. It was really kind of eerie. But people were out at 3 a.m. at that little observation deck there at the dam to watch the World War II ship go through.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My grandpa helped build those. He
came
to Evansville from Tell City and worked here, I think, stayed the weeks, and then would go back to Tell City back in the day. His brother was a war hero. And but so he was doing his part during.
What did he do at the shipyard?
I just know he helped build the LSTs, so I'm not too sure. And he was just a great machinist, tool and die guy, like my dad is. So we have that little history there too. Yeah. That's nice.
Well, tell me about your uncle.
Otis Salmon was captured. He was in the Bataan Death March. He was a major, and he spent, I think it was 3 or 4 years prisoner there. And for a lot of time, the family never knew if he was even alive or not. But he escaped the Bataan Death March, recaptured, was on prison ship, saw very hideous, horrible things. And, that's always, I saw him when I was a kid a couple times. He would visit, and it was just fascinating. But I think it was wasted on me of being so young.
Oh, sure.
Only older than.
Now you just. Really quizzing.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And, every detail.
Yeah, and then we've got, you know, quite a history. His great-grandfather, I hope I'm not getting these things wrong, died at the Andersonville prison in the Civil War. He was a prisoner there and was one of many that. So we have this strange family connection to really some of the worst things that ever happened in the U.S. military. And my cousin Sally, who would have been Otis's, I guess, granddaughter, I believe. She was a Marine and was involved in one of the worst days of involving female Marines in the Middle East. And so it's just a string of, I mean, it's great history, great stories on all of them. And unfortunately, I don't have the brain power to recall it all, but it's always been, I've been very proud to know that I'm a part of that. But, you know, my life has been totally going the other way, you know. But I sure am proud of what they've done.
You talked about growing up in Tell City. So you were a Tell City marksman?
I was a marksman, yeah, good old Tell City. And graduated in 83 from there. So I was a class of 83. And, it's all I knew. But I can tell you, David, the window to my world at that time was the Evansville Courier. And so that was an exciting thing to get that paper every day, and it kind of broadens your horizons. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, Joe Aaron, if you remember Joe.
I worked at the Courier.
I'm sure you did,
Joe was there. I was an obit writer.
Oh my gosh, I did not know
for
that.
The Evansville Courier. That's my first job in journalism was at the Evansville Courier. I was a student at the University of Evansville, And I was working nights at the Courier writing obituaries.
I did not know. That's amazing. Just that whole obit writing thing is fascinating. There's a great documentary out there about obit writers, too, that I love. But, yeah, so Joe was, you know, I was young, very young then, in the 70s, but I just loved what he did. It was kind of exciting. And then I think the paper probably, I'm pretty sure Irma Bombeck was in there. So I was reading Irma, it was like, she's basically writing about my mom and my grandma, you know, and I love that. And I loved the Irma Bombeck stuff more than, you know, we have Sunday dinner till, say, my grandma's and all his family would be there and football games would be on. So I would have to open the Sports Illustrated, yet it'd be Irma Bombeck inside there. I couldn't reveal that at the time. But those people really shaped, you know, this really trying to be, you know, Joe was funny, but he had a different style. Irma was always funny, but it was... I really liked what they were doing. It was, and then got a little bit older, and Stan Levko was writing. I can't remember if it was the press. I never understood how that worked, but his stuff, well, wow, he's talking about the Beatles and rock and roll. Joe Aaron wasn't doing that. But so those three were like the big three of my influencing me to eventually want to write funny stuff for newspapers.
Now, you went to the University of Southern Indiana.
Yes.
And you got involved in journalism there.
Yeah, you know, I started in business. I went to Western Kentucky my freshman year. I went from Dean's List academic probation within 1 year, and it was business. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I've played too much euchre with these guys from Kentucky in my dorm, and that was the only math I was learning, and it wasn't pretty. And I decided I gotta leave here. And it was the first year USI had the on-campus apartments. They were called MASH at the time, Mid-American Student Housing. But I liked it was an apartment complex or four of us in each one. And so I went there, met Ron Rote, who was a professor there. He's not with us anymore. He took me under his wings and said, because I love to write, and I knew I had to get something better that I could do. And Ron steered me toward the journalism angle, was very appreciative. He was the first guy to... Yeah, that was the year when computers were happening, you know, at that time. And he drug me to Target, and he made me buy an Acer computer, which was, I think we had to get a semi to deliver it to the apartments as big as a Volkswagen. And he came in and set it up, and he was just not having much to the chagrin of my parents. I think it was like a $1,200 piece of equipment at the time. But he said, "You typewriters are over, man. You're going to have to do this." Glad he did. It was like best, you know, he forced it on me, and I think I'm still paying for it. And but it's helped me out a lot. And then, you know, Matthew Graham, our poet laureate of Indiana right now, he was the other side of the influence and mentorship for me, that creative writing and fiction and poetry. So it was always Matthew and Ron Rote who really set me straight and taught me, you know. Or it just inspired me to do what I did. And still talk to Matthew. He's in our show every night, our Will Ring Sing for Food show, which we can talk about later. But just saw him a couple months ago, and glad to stay in touch with him as well. So, so USI, just an amazing, that was my campus. That was the kind of campus I wanted, that size. You know, I excelled once I got in journalism, and because of stuff, I could do it. Mm-hmm. And so from there, it went to graduating in 87. First newspaper job was in Princeton, Daily Clarion. A couple months later, an opening happened at the Dubois County Herald in Jasper. And I liked what they were doing there. And so I moved there and then was there about 16 months and ended up on the east coast of Virginia. The Newport News Daily Press, which is over by Virginia Beach. I've always been a Jimmy Buffett fan, so my dream was always to live by the ocean. A lot of other weirdos liked it too, I soon discovered. So paradise lost. But
let me introduce you again to our listeners. My guest is Scott Salmon. He's a columnist for the Dubois County Herald and author of a new book, What Are You Going to Write About When I'm Gone? Where it's about his mother, Patricia. And I understand your mom has approached you about writing her obituary. Now, did she give you a word limit? Or?
It's still in general. I don't think she's going to need it, Dave. I really don't. After her. This Christmas was her fifth last Christmas, and I and we did not meet this year because of COVID. And I assured her, Mom, you're going to be here for six. But yes, that was going to be a tough assignment for me. But it's like, I kind of felt like, well, Mom, I've been doing this for years, writing your obituary, but I haven't written that yet. I hope I don't have to. But yeah, that was an odd request back about the first year she had the colon cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, that's always looming. She is just a positive force she has survived because of positive thinking. She's been given, you know, summer she was given 2 months to live. It's been 4 or 5 months since then. And she just refuses. You can't even tell her, really, I don't think. I mean, she naps quite a bit. She's beyond treatments. She can't ever do any more treatments. And so it's inside her. The numbers are hideous. But outside, she still gets around, you know, still drives and gets her hair done on Fridays. Like I said, they hit the boats on Friday, Saturday, their standard Friday night date at Kavanaugh's. They are treated like kings and queens.
Oh, I bet they
are. You know, I think they earned every penny.
I'm sure they did. More to come with my guest, Scott Salmon. We mentioned earlier his concerts, We'll Sing and Read for Food. We're going to talk about those. Also, Scott's fascination with Harry Chafin.
Yeah, sure.
This is 2 Main Street. I'm David James. 2 Main Street is presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Baird Private Wealth Management. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is Scott Salmon, columnist with the Du Bois County Herald, a media specialist at Kimball Electronics, and a well-known humorist and entertainer, hosting a series of Will Read and Sing for Food concerts. Scott's new book is What Are You Going to Write About When I'm Gone? It's about his mom, Patricia, and her ongoing battle with cancer. She's hanging in there. And how she and the family managed to both laugh and sometimes cry through this journey. Mm-hmm. So, Scott, a portion of the sale of the book goes to the Anderson Woods Special Needs Summer Camp.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, that's located up in Bristow, Indiana, out in the sticks of Perry County. It's been around, I think, since the 70s. But it's an incredible camp in the summer where it reaches out, all the way to Indianapolis. I know I'm not a spokesperson for them, but I know it's tri-state wide, people who go, and it's, you know, kids and a lot of adults with disabilities, and it gives them a real camp experience. They stay all week. They got an amazing staff there. It's mom and dad's favorite charity, and we've done a lot of, when we had Will Ring Sing for Food, we raised money for them, and the directors are actually musicians in our show. It's an incredible thing. I went out there one day just to see it, how it operates, and it's just like, wow. It's wow. Mm-hmm.
Well, tell me about that very first Will Read and Sing for Food concert. Mm. How did that come about?
So in 2011, I always wanted to, you know, I used to write a lot of fiction. That was my direction, and I wanted to write books and get things published, and then I loved readings. I always loved that sense of being able to read your stuff in front of people. So a part of it was just, I really want to get out there. I only want to do it with my humor columns because that's what works for a general audience. And so I was always inspired by the late, great Harry Chapin, Cats in the Cradle, Taxi, songs like that. And but I also knew that Harry would do one show for himself and one show for the other guy. And, that's always, even at a young age, you know, when I was in grade school and learned that, and especially afterwards, you would hear about that. So I knew the show. I wanted the show to do something for the food bank and the community food bank in Jasper, Indiana. So all these shows were going to be dedicated. We just raised money, you know. Nobody was getting paid for anything. Any money we could raise, we would give it to the community food bank. The format of the show wasn't really inspired by. I really like Matthew Graham has this. He's one of his big buddies is a superstar musician named David Broza, and he actually was at New Harmony probably early 90s or 90, and I saw, David put music to some of Matthew's poems and recorded it, and David, huge musician, but it was neat how Matthew would read his poem, and then David would do the music version of it that's been recorded, and they do that back and forth. So, and this is way before I even did the show, but that always stuck to me as, that's what I want to do. It's got to be music, it's got to be words, and so that was an inspiration.
And there's some drama in that too.
Sure. It's and then the Last Waltz, one of the greatest music documentaries ever made about the band, when their last show, I think in '76 on Thanksgiving, Martin Scorsese did this thing, and that was, they would just bring all their friends, Neil Young and poets and. And so those three things were really like, wow, at least for the format was David and Matthew and then The Last Waltz. But it was that whole Harry Chapin thing. It's like the philanthropy of it all. And so we just started in food banks. The first show was just designed. It was me and Chris Lasher and a Vietnam vet named Ed Waston, who taught English. And he would write some of his essays about his experiences in Vietnam. And then and Ray Major, a great musician in Du Bois County. And so it was just us four, and it was mainly focused. It was called We'll Read for Food. I'm sorry. That's what, really the focus was on my column. I just wanted to steal the – it was Scott. Not really. But the music worked around it. And we started inviting guest musicians.
And you say in your book there's so much talent and so close to home.
Yeah. It's amazing how much talent. I mean, especially here in Evansville and Du Bois County, where the musicians out there, they're everywhere, and they're great. There are great musicians it's like, why aren't these people famous now? But it's a different world now. But so I was able to draw these folks with donate their musical talents because it's for a good cause. And we just kept building it. Finally, it's like, after a year, it's like, oh, people are really liking the music more than my stories. let's add some. So We'll Read and Sing for Food became the song, or became the show.
Well, you
title.
Can talk about, you have a reggae performer.
Yeah, Zion here in Evansville. Amazing talent. I saw him playing probably somewhere close to Main Street one night for something outside the front of a bar or a restaurant. And it was like, oh my God, this guy's incredible. Zion, we love you. And so he was, yeah, so we had every style of, throughout the years.
Now you have, besides the local talent, Harry Chaffin's daughter, Jen?
Yeah, Jen.
Came to one of the shows?
Yeah, Jen has been to a couple of our shows. She's a musician, very unique musician, songwriter. She doesn't live on the coattails of her dad, Harry, and she has her own style and stuff, and it's more of a urban jazz. She has a jazz trio, and so they came down because they were doing some touring. Actually, I think they had something involved with something like USI one time, but she said, hey, we'll be right there. How we were just connected because she was aware of the show. And so that was like a full circle moment for me. I don't know if it was like 2014, 15, somewhere around there that she came and was a guest with it. I mean, the show still was that normal, think the Garrison Keillor's, the show, Prairie Home Companion, that too, it was that type of, just going
sure.
We were just funnier though.
I want to ask you about, your mom has done some bits on the show.
Yeah, every now and then we bring her on stage.
So she's not shy.
Mom is not shy.
Okay.
No. My favorite stories that we would do in the show are almost like Imagine Radio show. I write a lot of them script-wise. They've already been columns in the newspaper. But it's, you have all these different people reading. So if you just close your eyes, it's almost like, an old radio show, but the funny stuff. So they're just, story. I mean, my topless mom story brings it down. And it's not because of my mom. It's because of my dad in it. Somehow the story segues into, I decided we were big Scrabble fanatics. We joined a Scrabble tournament here, and I invited my parents to be my partners, which is scary because what's, you know, if mom's top falls in the Scrabble tournament, it's all she wrote. So I made her make sure she had clothespins attached to her and everything else to keep it out. But anyway, so before the Scrabble tournament, we're eating at Arby's, and all of a sudden Dad sees something on the floor and under our table. It's like, oh, God. I know it's a curly fry. Dad doesn't like wasting food, and he's found this loose food he's gonna suck up. And but instead, it was a glass lens, a pair of glasses. He just held it up and looked at it, and he goes, "Some poor blah 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 lost their glass." He starts laughing about it. Then he walks up to get a drink, and we notice as he's walking away, his glasses are in his back pocket with a missing lens. And so this whole time he thinks he's laughing about somebody else. But for some reason, when we get to that point, that brings a lot of laughter. So suddenly Dad stole the show with his. But there's just a lot of, so, you know, Dave, the our radio euchre thing is pretty funny. I just thought, you know, I always have a radio mind. And it's like, what if there was like 2 hours of just euchre playing aired on the radio, and radio euchre? So there's the whole thing about that, and it's just like a lot.
Like play-by-play.
Play-by-play, oh, yeah, yeah. And NPR picked it up, I believe. That's how I positioned it. But and so it's just like pass.
Dead air.
Watch Trump, which is a dangerous question. And
we're talking to Scott Solomon from Du Bois County. He writes a column in the Du Bois County Herald, and we're talking about his new book about his mother. What are you going to write about when I'm gone? And now, of course, you're from Du Bois County now.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up in Perry County.
Yeah.
Du Bois County is really a hotbed for COVID-19 right now. A lot of cases in Du Bois County. People, I assume, are in desperate need for some comic relief there. So do you try to provide that in your columns?
Know, I try. Depends on how it's interpreted. You know, it's a funny business, this column writing, you know.
What kind of feedback do you get?
You know, I don't know. I can tell you, David, the Courier has ran my column now since August. And so I get two a month in the Evansville Courier. So I've got both papers, which I love the in a bigger audience now with the tri-state. Mm-hmm. And I do get a lot of emails and stuff. But you know, the mom stories are the ones I get most of it's funny and they find it. But I get so many nice emails from people who have been through the same thing. I did a column, David, on a long time ago, back when I was working for the Herald back in the late 80s. I announced open hunting season on lawn animals, stone animals. You know, just goofy. And there was a whole serial stealing of lawn ornaments from Du Bois, up to over 100 and some. This was getting crazy.
Like you were the instigator.
Yeah,
of this.
Oh, police came to me and asked if I would write another column and bring an end to this. And they also, they had a stone chick that they confiscated or something. They were sitting on my desk. But I think they thought I did it. It was like, and they were lady, you know, I'd read that one to some, if I'd speak in some social events or whatever, and a little lady walked up to me from Ireland, Indiana, if I wrote that one, she looked, "You're the one!" And she was very intense about it. And it's like, no, I can't control what these people are going to do. And so, yeah, it's the scourge of lawn ornaments everywhere. It's all kind of. Each one's different. Every time I think I write a good one, I never hear anything. And it's the one's like, that you get the nice.
It's funny what touches the nerve. It really is.
Oh, it is. It is. But for the most part, it's been positive. And, yeah, we do need some laughter now. Mm-hmm. And some hate me. Some people love me, and I'm in between for others. And what is it?
But if you don't get any reaction at all, then you're not doing your job. That's the way I look at it.
And really, I feel like I haven't done my job because the reaction isn't really that great. And, you know, I feel like yesterday I ran one of the Herald that I thought was the funniest thing I've ever written. And because I was laughing at it, which is rare that I laugh at things. And And I haven't heard a damn thing about that. So I guess I think if I'm laughing, I better, it's like, oh, no, I'm setting myself up for failure on this one. But I'm quite proud of it. So sometimes I write them for myself.
Sure, you're entertaining yourself. That's good.
Oh, my gosh.
My guest is Scott Solomon. He's an essayist, columnist, freelance writer. Now, coming up, we're going to hear about some of Scott's other literary works, one with the rather disturbing title, Nose Hairs Gone Wild. To Main Street is presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services by Bayard Private Wealth Management. I'm David James. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Two Main Street. I'm David James. If you are just joining us, my guest is writer Scott Solomon, whose column appears in the Du Bois County Herald and also in the local newspaper. Sunday Courier. Now, his latest book is What Are You Going to Write About When I'm Gone? Essays of Hilarity and Heartache About His Mother, Patricia. And the co-writers are Austin and Delaney Abby Solomon.
Mm-hmm.
Relations, of course.
Yes, they are. I created a monster coven of writers, so it runs in the family, at least for us three. So, yeah, they're great, really good writers. Going to be way better than I am and probably are right now. But I invited them to write one about your grandmother, and it brings tears in my eyes just thinking about talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, tell us about the cover of the book.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting cover. I assume that's Patricia and
that's
your
dad. Yeah. Yeah, that was taken at some restaurant. I can see somebody in back there who doesn't get credit for posing like that, but it looks like a restaurant. But, yeah, it was just a picture. Mom's kissing Dad on the side of the face. Her eyes are closed, and Dad's staring out with some silly look. And I always liked that picture. I think I just shot it on my cell phone one day, and I was like, oh, this is going to be a book cover. And, I have very good parents.
Now, you have written other essay collections, including one, and I mentioned it earlier, mm-hmm. called Nose Hairs Gone Wild.
Yes.
So tell me about that, Scott.
Well, it's another collection of humor columns. But one that really went well in my Will Reading Scene for Food shows was called Nose Hairs Gone Wild. And I think it was when I was in my early 40s, mid-40s, you get that age and all of a sudden you start noticing. At first I thought it was a cricket in my nose and legs, cricket leg. And I was like, ow, that's no cricket. And it was like these, it's like, oh, my God, it's a nose hair. I'm becoming one of those old men that I used to be scared of. So I clip it, thinking that'll take care of it. But once you clip the nose hair day, forget it. It brings all of its buddies down. They're protesting. And they keep coming and coming and... And it was funny, tied to the WNIN here, I actually read that column. I had done a few audios of my columns for 88.3, and I distinctly remember reading that column, and I think they aired it around lunchtime, and somebody just tweeted, please, I'm trying to eat here. And so I knew I hit my mark on that person. But, so Nose Hair's Gone Wild was sort of the title track of that book. And
I guess the sequel would be Ear Hair Gone Wild.
You know, I've been pondering. Ear Hair did come a bit later, and I am seriously been thinking about how am I going to work in the ear hair now.
Oh.
And, it's just disgusting, David. I had never dreamed I'd become this person.
Well, I remember my wife and I, we were on a cruise, and we were in Cozumel, Mexico, and we were on the dock there going back to the ship, and there was this gentleman there, and my wife just kind of nudged me with her elbow, and she look, this guy had ear hair, and it looked like a wig coming out of his ear. I mean, how could this guy even hear? And she, you just want to go there with clippers, and get it. And then she said, he can't be married. His wife wouldn't tolerate that.
He was hard of hearing, you'd hang ornaments off that. Cozumel, my favorite place to rest.
Thank you for bringing that up,
but your hairs are not. that's funny.
Now, your column writing, you've said it's not pretty. That's also one of your titles.
Yeah, there was a Steve Martin album back after his first Wild and Crazy Guy one called comedy is not pretty. And he's on the front with his wig and his lipstick and stuff. And that was like late 79 or so. And I always remember that cover because I loved Steve. I love all that bizarre humorous. And it's just some, you know, eventually it's like, oh, I got to do a book cover, like this album cover. I'll call it Column Writing Is Not Pretty. So, yeah, that was a, you know, I think that was the worst selling of my books. They're all bad sellers. Quite proud of that, I think. And, you know, if you go look on Amazon, it's like my latest book is probably on the 3 billion list at this point. Probably have made it to there. But I think the cover of me and the wig and the trying to be funny like Steve Martin, it hurt my sales. And I had faithful people buying my book who would not buy that one. And I should just rip the cover off. But... it's all about marketing. I'm terrible at that.
Now, where do these ideas come from? Just from your cranium, or people feed you ideas?
Nah,
or what?
It's just in me, David. I don't know where it comes from. I've just always, you know, was raised to appreciate my Uncle David. Would, you know, it was just the funny stuff, the movie he taught me, you know, back then, Woody Allen movies I liked. You can't mention Woody Allen anymore, but that bizarre type of humor was just instilled in me, and I'm not looking for it. It just comes. And I don't know if I'm funny or not, David. I think I am, and people sometimes disagree, but it's always there. And it's, if you do these columns for so long, your mind is just next, is just churning. It's the most enjoyable thing I do. I'm glad that the Herald still runs my stuff after all these years, and the Courier has picked it up, because, you know, it's kind of a neat thing that Joe Aaron was the first thing that I, and Stan, and now I get to supply some stuff to the papers, and it's been a nice full circle thing. But it's just always, I've just always looked for, the bizarre just comes to me, and you know, people accuse me, you're just laughing your way through uncomfortable situations, and you're hiding, what are you hiding? It's like a...
Well, this is, maybe it's your therapy, Scott.
It is daily therapy. And it's, you know, I do it in my spare time. I work for Kimball Electronics. I'm their director of communications. And Kimball Electronics is based in Jasper, but it's global reach. We got facilities all over the world. And so that's been nice to be able to travel to visit these places in Asia.
So where have you been on your travels?
Been to in China and Thailand and Romania and Poland and, of course, Mexico. And what's nice is on these trips, while you're over there, you can tie in some things that are non-work related and take a little personal vacation as well. Might as well while you're there, especially in Europe.
Where and some column material.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And I've been, Dave, all my life I was so terrified of flying. And it almost caused me to lose my job in like 2014, 2012. I couldn't do it. And there's so many things, you know, we're from Tel City. We had the, you know, the plane crash in the 1962, sure. You know, on I think St. Patrick's Day in March. And
it was a DC-3, I think.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
I mean, that, and so that just being, you know, it was before my dad saw it. It's like everybody in town must have saw it. Everybody, oh, I saw that. And back in those days, but that monument in Rome, Indiana, I believe. I remember that was, they just took you there as a kid, and you're like, and this is flying to me. Flying was failure and death and destruction. And so, and then the U of E thing, Brian Taylor, you know, he was our hero.
Right.
And all these, flying was always about crashes to me. And so it just sunk in. My buddy, Matt Fry from Illinois, who I went to school with, died in a plane crash in L.A. So this just kept building up, and then when it was like, okay, you're going to start doing some global travel, I got full body hives, and I was getting ready for my first trip was going to be to China of any overflying. I did some, you know, I didn't enjoy flying in the U.S., but this was my first big trip all the way to China, and I bailed the day before on my boss. I said, I cannot do it, and you know, that was a point where I learned, I went through some therapy and worked on it, and now I love going anywhere, David. But it was years of And I overcame this fear of flying. I got a column I really liked that I wrote about that, and not much funny to it, but how I overcame it and how I'm able to do it. And now there's just been a lot of flying in all these countries, and it is an amazing experience.
Well, that is your education. I mean, you've got to get out of your little bubble. People have got to realize that we're not the only people on this planet.
Oh, sure.
And people have different cultures, and, you know, we can learn a lot from these other other societies, definitely.
I've made so many friends.
Now, let's go to your bucket list. Do you have a bucket list?
Do I have a bucket list? You know, Dave, I just wish I could reach more people with the columns. That would be, because that's just what I love to do. And I wish I could do that. But bucket list-wise, you know, Dave, I got married 2 years ago for the second time. I was divorced for many years. So my bucket list was meeting, finally, that person. Good old Bryn Salmon now, who lives in Fishers, Indiana, and I'm still in Jasper, and we just go back and forth. And I was actually just there, just came back from last night. But finally, you know, meeting that person that loves you no matter what. So that was nice.
Does she think you're funny?
Oh, sure. That's part of it. I mean, all these girlfriends, you're not funny at all. It's like, Brent, you're funny. And so on our very last show, official last show, show number 150 of Will Reed and Sing for Food at the beautiful Astra Theater, which was revived and redone, I surprised her at halftime with a, you know, Will You Marry Me thing. Got 300 plus people watching this. The whole town knew. Good thing about Bryn, she wasn't in Jasper, so she never knew. So I had told the whole town so people would come to the show and see me get dumped. And that's why people came. I was going to say no. This is Scott. But it worked out real well and surprised her. And then it was on with the show for the second half of the show. But, yeah, so she surprised. I had a guy, a guitarist, Buddy Hart, Let My Love Open the Door, the Pete Townsend song. That was one of our songs. I said, Buddy, get ready. If you see this right hand, play the song. Because she said yes. Because we did it off mic, but people were watching. And
had to be your favorite show, I would think.
Oh, heck yeah. And that was a great way to end it. We had so much money for dozens of charities, and it just wore me out, and I was ready to quit. So Bryn said yes, and I've been a happy guy ever since. As far as the show, we ended it there 2 years ago, but we came back to the Lincoln Amphitheater in September of 2020 to raise money. You know, all the venues are getting hit here and left. But Mark Stezik, the director, has done an amazing job with it as a concert venue, an actual outdoor amphitheater, and actually it's one of the largest fully covered amphitheaters in the country. And Mark, through the state, has brought these shows. You know, I don't know how many years now it's been, 3 or 4 years, of there's actually real concerts with, you know, people from the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and so we went in. You know, it was covered, and you know, it's a 1,500 seat stadium. Legally, social practice, you could do 300, and you're just totally spread out, and it's beautiful. You've probably been there, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
Oh. So we had probably 200 some September 19th, Saturday night, and it was my core musicians and my reader. Abby Rombach is so funny. She read and I read, and Matthew Graham, he was the poet laureate of Will Reed and Sing for Food, the only poet ever allowed to be on our show, way before he became last year the state poet laureate. Matthew's just an incredible guy. If you haven't interviewed him out here, he should be on here because he's currently in his second year of the state poet laureate. And but anyway, we did a show. Everybody, you know, was safe and done right, and the face mask and everything, and the audience was spread, and it was sure good to be back out there again. And so I'm hoping that we'll get together again. I just won't put on so many shows, and it's but you know, if we could do another one, the Amp, maybe once a year, and maybe 3 or 4 for the Astra Theater and raise money for them, that's what I'd love to do. And everybody's dying to be together. It was so nice to be with people again, the musicians, and especially that time. You're kind of reluctant. It's like, oh, this whole COVID, should we really do this? And turned out fine, and raise money for the Amp, and it was just a great time, and I hope we can do it again. Eventually.
Well, I think people are desperate for this, for live entertainment and to be entertained and to be with other people and experience that.
Dave, this is an example right now.
Sure.
Of hunger. I'm seeing a human being, although there's a glass between us.
Yes, that's right.
But I have not, other than family, I mean, I've worked from home from last March on. And I saw this coming because of my involvement with China. I knew this was going to get us. Because you understand how small the world is. But to be here, and you're not family, and I'm actually talking with a face mask, and we are shielded, and this is great. You're not on a computer screen. I don't even know if I can even do this anymore. I don't know if I can talk to people, but I'm trying right now, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Well, Scott Solomon, this has been a lot of fun, and your latest book is What Are You Going to Write About When I'm Gone? And it's about your mother's battle with cancer. So what is the answer to that question? What are you going to write about when she's gone?
Yeah, she asked me that one time, and that's what obviously spawned the thing. What am I going to write when she's gone? You know, there's many stories I write that aren't about Mom, but this book is about Mom, or guest appearances about Mom. I know so many things are going to go wrong in my life that are great material for stories. And I would hope this is a failure, David, because I think I can write something funny about it. And so I'm always looking for that. But I know that even if Mom's going to, like I said, she's going to bury me, I'm sure. But there's going to be plenty of disaster to write about and try to make fun of it. And so I can only hope things keep going wrong, David.
Well, I know this book is a celebration of life, a celebration of your family and your experiences. And all the best to your mom, Patricia, and the rest of your family. Scott Solomon, thanks for being my guest on 2 Main Street.
It's been a great time.
Well, I've enjoyed it too. 2 Main Street is presented by Jeffrey Berger of Berger Wealth Services at Bayard Private Wealth Management. Scott Solomon's books, including his latest, What Are You Going to Write About When I'm Gone, are available on Amazon, and proceeds from the sale are being donated to Anderson Woods Special Needs Summer Camp.